Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone phone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Caroline Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Dr. Messner, please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's workshop. And today's workshop is a partnership between the Lymphoma Research Foundation of America and Cancer Care. And we're delighted to be partnering with them on today's program and, indeed, you'll be hearing more about the Lymphoma Foundation of America and all the wonderful resources that they offer you. Today's program is supported by Genmab and Novartis Oncology, and I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before I introduce our first speakers, I actually want to go over just who all of you are on the call today. So we have over 100 participants on this call today, and you come from all the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from the Philippines, South Africa, and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well, and a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And we're delighted to have all of you on the call today. And now it is my great pleasure and honor to introduce our first speaker, my esteemed colleague, Dr. Catherine S.M. Diefenbach. And Dr. Diefenbach is the Associate Professor of Medicine, Translational Director of Hematology, Director of Clinical Lymphoma, Perlmutter Cancer Center, an NCI Designated Comprehensive Cancer Center, NYU Langone Health. And Dr. Diefenbach will be addressing an overview of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, or DLBCL, including staging and grading, current standard of care, new and emerging treatment approaches, treatment options for relapsed refractory DLBCL, including bispecific antibodies, understanding how bispecific antibodies work in the treatment of relapsed refractory DLBCL, the role of clinical trials, how research contributes to treatment options, tips to prevent and manage treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, and pain, talking with your healthcare team to learn more about quality of life concerns, guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepare a list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Diefenbach.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me? So I'm Dr. Diefenbach. I work at NYU Langone Health, and I'm happy to talk to all of you guys today. So diffuse large B-cell is the most common lymphoma that's aggressive. And it's quite common. There are a lot of subtleties about it, but basically it's the most common lymphoma that is aggressive. It has the way you identify it is that it has a lot of this CD20 expression, which is very common with B-cell lymphomas, and is important because CD20 is a target not just of the drug that we use in frontline therapy, Rituxan, but also a drug I'll talk to you about a little later called bispecific antibodies. CD20 is an antigen that's expressed on the surface not only of lymphoma cells, but also of normal B cells. But it is a way to target lymphocytes, of which lymphomas are malignant lymphocytes, without targeting any other class of cell in the body. So when you are diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, before you can be treated, you need to be staged. Now, this is very different. Staging is very different than all solid tumors, where you talk about stage 3 or stage 4 disease being terrible and the disease only curable in stage 1 or 2. Stage 4 diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is still curable, potentially, and that is because lymphocytes are cells that travel all the time and travel to any can travel everywhere in your body. So it's not like breast cancer where a breast cell out of the breast is metastatic, or lung cancer where a lung cell out of the lung is metastatic. There are lymph nodes all over the body and lymphocytes travel. So stage is only one component of the prognostic score that we use to understand how to risk stratify patients. Other risk stratification factors include what your performance status is, that is how fit you are and how much the lymphoma has impaired your fitness, whether you have how old you are, because how old you are impacts your ability to tolerate chemotherapy at full dose, whether you have any disease outside of your lymph nodes, so involvement of your bone marrow or your spleen, how many extranodal sites you have, if you have more than one or just one, you know, whether you have stage 3 or 4 disease, as I said, is one component of this, whether you have an elevation in a marker called, tumor marker called LDH or lactate dehydrogenase, and that's a marker, again, for inflammation and a surrogate for tumor aggressiveness. So all of these together give us a risk score, so that if you're only stage 4 but have no extranodal disease and you're young, you could have stage 4 disease but only have a risk score of 1. So that's what I'm trying to explain, is that basically stage is only one component of risk in lymphoma. Grading talks about how aggressive your tumor is, and grade is actually, you know, in large cell lymphoma, there is no low-grade large cell lymphoma. There is a variant called transformed lymphoma where you may have a low-grade lymphoma and then the DLBCL arises from that low-grade lymphoma. So then you have really two populations of lymphoma, a low-grade and a high-grade, and we treat the high-grade, and we, you know, generally the low-grade is treated along with the high-grade, and the hope is that only the low-grade recurs and not the high-grade, because low-grade lymphomas are not conventionally thought to be cured with chemotherapy the way high-grade lymphomas are. And then, like I said, you look at some molecular features which can help us understand how aggressive the lymphoma is. So we look at the expression and translocation of BCL2, BCL6, and MYC. And expression of BCL6, BCL2, and MYC, either by IHC or by FISH, can tell us if you're a double hit or a double expressor. And these patients have particularly aggressive disease. In terms of standard treatment for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the standard of care is the CD20 targeting antibody rituximab in combination with CHOP chemotherapy. So that's really been the standard of care for the last 25 years or so. The CHOP components are cyclophosphamide, adriamycin, vincristine, and prednisone. Everything except the prednisone is given on day one, and then the prednisone is given for 5 days at a dose of 100 milligrams daily. In 3 years ago, there was a trial called the POLARIX trial that looked at the antibody drug conjugate polatuzumab vedotin, which was targeting CD79B. So an antibody drug conjugate is basically a chemotherapy on a stick. So it uses the antigen-antibody interaction as a way to deliver chemotherapy into the cell. So it's really targeted chemotherapy. And this was conjugated to a drug called calicheamycin that is a spindle toxin. And so the phase 3 trial looked at R-CHOP versus RCHP, and they took out the vincristine and substituted polatuzumab. And there was a significant improvement in progression-free survival, which is basically number of patients relapsing when they did their first analysis. And on the basis of this, polatuzumab is now approved for the treatment of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma in the front line. When they looked at a subset analysis, they saw that the patients who benefited the most were patients with a subtype of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma called activated B-cell or non-germinal center type diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, but there was benefit seen for everyone with no additional toxicity, so this is another option for patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. In terms of in the context of COVID, so and seasonal flu and RSV, so all lymphoma patients are immunocompromised just because their lymphocytes don't work as well. But in terms of COVID, basically what you have to do is you also have to really be careful with COVID and be you know, really, really careful not to get COVID, because particularly Rituxan abrogates our response to basically, what Rituxan does is it takes away the good B cells as well as the bad B cells, which are your immunologic memory, and that basically prevents you from having your first line of defense against COVID. And when you have lost your first line of defense against COVID, you can get sicker with COVID. And so not only are you immunocompromised, you're really missing your first line of defense. And for that reason, we recommend that everyone who's on lymphoma treatment or within a year of lymphoma treatment get Paxlovid if they get COVID. With regard to seasonal flu and RSV, supportive care and follow-up with your PCP. And for flu, you can take Tamiflu. Vaccination, we still recommend getting vaccinated, but your vaccines may not work as well because you're missing the B cells that really can boost your immune response. And so you may have a lower vaccine response than somebody who has not had Rituxan. So that is something to know both for flu and COVID, that you may not mount as good of an immune response as someone who's not getting Rituxan-based therapy. Okay, so we talked about new and emerging treatments with polatuzumab. So what happens if your lymphoma comes back? If your lymphoma comes back, the second line treatment now is to get a CAR T cell, which is a chimeric antigen receptor T cell. And this is where they take your own body's immune T cells out of your body, train them to attack the lymphoma, and put them back in your body. And that was shown to be better than going for auto transplant if you had relapsed within a year of your first treatment. Some patients who go for CAR T cell may need bridging therapy, so they may need another therapy to get them bridged to CAR, and then we can give them some chemo just to get the CAR ready, because it takes anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 months to get your cells out to grow them up and then have the CAR be ready to go. So there are many options for relapsed lymphoma patients, including standard chemotherapy, and that would include things like ICE or gemcitabine and oxaliplatin. Then there are approved agents. I'll talk about bispecifics in a minute, but there's Lonca, which is an antibody drug conjugate. Again, this targets CD19. We don't recommend this in people getting CAR because this is targeting the same thing that the CAR targets, and we don't want to lose the expression of that target or have that target be downregulated. But this is a good option for patients who are more frail who are not going to get a CAR. The drug tafasitamab and lenalidomide, which is an oral agent, is what we call an IMID, that also has been shown to be active in patients in the second and third line. There's other drugs such as the antibody drug conjugate polatuzumab, which if you haven't gotten it in the first line, combination with R or with Rituxan or with Rituxan and bendamustine can be quite effective, not in the long term, but at least to control things until you get a CAR or to get disease under control to then go on a lighter therapy. There are other treatments as well, but one of the most exciting ones is this thing called a bispecific antibody, and that basically is an antibody that has two arms. Rituxan is a one-arm antibody against CD20, so you target the CD20 on the lymphoma cells and hope that then the body will use its own immune system to kill it. Bispecific antibodies, basically take this to 11. And so they'll take one arm that targets the T cells in your body, which are your immune system, that, it's not targeting it to hurt it, it's targeting it to activate it. And then it grabs onto CD20 on the B cell and basically feeds the B cell to the T cell and says, look, T cell, here's a tumor cell. Eat this. And then the tumor cell eats it and says, yummy. And then it tells all its friends, oh, there are some yummy tumor cells around here. Let's eat them. And basically, that's how a bispecific antibody works. So bispecific antibodies are approved in the third line for patients with relapsed and refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And they have a high activity. And it actually looks like, with 3 years of follow-up, there is a subset of patients who 2 years after getting this therapy have not relapsed. Now, that's very exciting because we know CAR T cures patients with relapsed lymphoma. It may well be that bispecifics are curing some patients with relapsed DLBCL2, not necessarily, it's too early yet to know whether they're curing the same patients, different patients, and how many patients they're curing, but there is a possibility that both glofitamab, which is a Genentech antibody that has two arms for basically is a 2-to-1, so it has two arms for T cells and one arm for CD20, or epcoritamab, which is a 1-in-1, whether these antibodies are, you know, we know that they're highly effective for patients with relapsed large cell. We don't yet know what fraction of patients are being cured, although some patients certainly are. There are also trials ongoing. There was one trial that looked at gemcitabine and oxaliplatin with glofitamab. There's a study of glofitamab and ICE chemotherapy. And then there are trials underway to look at whether these bispecific antibodies improve outcomes in frontline treatment. And those studies are ongoing right now, combining either glofitamab or epcoritamab with R-CHOP chemo or R-CHIP-POLA chemotherapy. So this kind of segues into the role of clinical trials or how research contributes to treatment options. So all of these new drugs were developed because of patients participating in clinical trials, whether that was the first, phase 1-2 early studies of bispecific antibodies or antibody-drug conjugates, where patients were being trusted for safety and efficacy, onto the phase 3s now that got the bispecifics approved in relapsed lymphoma or got polatuzumab approved in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma treatment, or the ongoing phase 3s adding the bispecifics to frontline treatment, or the studies looking at CAR T cells and how they were developed in second relapse compared to auto transplant. None of that would have happened unless patients had participated in research, literally none of it. So research is enormously important to contribute to ongoing treatment options, and that is really like one of the very most important things that we can possibly do, you know, for our patients, is to keep participating in research and keep developing drugs and keep moving things forward. So tips to manage and prevent treatment side effects. That's in and of itself a whole call, and I don't think I could do that in 5 minutes, but I think the most important thing that I would say there is be in regular communication with your doctor and your healthcare team. So most likely you have a doctor and a nurse practitioner or a doctor and a nurse administering your chemo. They should be checking with you regularly, and you should be checking with them regularly. This is a communication, and, you know, especially in the first couple of cycles of treatment, I talk to my patients every week to see how they're doing. If you're having, and every patient is different, but if you're having diarrhea, if you're having nausea, if you're having rashes, you got to let your doctor know about this, because then we have a whole bag of tricks that we can do to make you feel better. But unless we know about it, we can't, you know, make you feel better. So I don't think anyone, you know, that I take care of, I think everyone we did, nausea is not something that most of my patients have, you know, significant problems with it, because if one thing doesn't work, we try another thing. Same with diarrhea or constipation, rash. Those are really the main side effects. Fatigue is a common side effect of chemotherapy, and you're not going to be able to do as much as you were doing off chemotherapy. But as long as you dial back, depending on how intense your chemo is, anywhere from 30 to 50%, you are not going to be lying in bed unable to do things. You just have to recalibrate for the time you're on chemo to what you're able to do. Sometimes in the first cycle, you have a lot of pain as the lymphoma cells die, and that can be quite scary because it's unexpected. So having your doctor tell you about that can make it a lot less frightening, especially when you know that it might be your chemotherapy working. So this segues into, you should definitely talk to your healthcare team about any quality of life concerns you have at any time. None of these questions are ever unwelcome, and we can't help you unless you let us know, you know, how we can help you and what you need, you know, and what you need from us. I think then you know, we can address this. And most of my patients see a nutritionist at least once in their treatment. They see a social worker at least once in their treatment. And I think it's really important to have a team approach, to have all these people on your care team. In terms of telehealth and telemedicine appointments, I generally do these, you know, my nurse will do this for chemo teaching so that the patient doesn't have to come into the office for a whole nother visit unless they want to. So we offer this as an option for chemotherapy teaching. Often we do this for check-ins between chemotherapy. Again, if someone's doing okay, but we just want to do a 5 or 10 minute check-in to make sure they're not having nausea or other symptoms, we can do a quick video visit and then they don't have to, you know, get organized to come into the office, particularly if they're feeling tired or other things. So to do this, you know, for us, for example, you need to have the NYU app, the MyCharts, because the telehealth is done through the MyChart. So for all the telehealth, you probably need to make sure you have a working phone or tablet, the app from the hospital that you're connected with, and then you want to have, you know, if you have an agenda and you're not just calling to check in, you should have your notes ready because it's a little bit more of a fast-paced thing usually. And so you just want to have all your notes ready so you know what you're going to ask. So, you know, I want to reiterate sort of at the end of this, you know, discussion that diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is a very treatable lymphoma. It's often curable lymphoma. It's very heterogeneous. It is a lymphoma that should always be taken care of by a lymphoma specialist and not by someone who sees a large number of different kinds of cancers, because there are a lot of nuances in lymphoma care. And so if you're anywhere close to someone that has a lymphoma specialist, you'll be better served from someone who lives, eats, and breathes these nuances rather than someone who sees one or two lymphomas a year. However, if you are, you know, seeing a general doctor who is up on the literature, the frontline treatment of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is pretty standardized to be either R-CHOP or R-CHIP-POLA. There have been a profusion of exciting new therapies developed for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, including the CAR T-cells, the bispecific antibodies, and other targeted therapies. And your doctor and your care team are always here to help manage your symptoms and get you through your treatment. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Diefenbeck. What a tour de force, a superb presentation. Stellar, and really, you're the first speaker, and you really set the stage for today's program, and you gave people so much information. I want everyone to know that this program is live, of course, today, those of you who are listening today, and that will also be available in about a week on a podcast. It'll be there up for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for so you'll be able to access this program and listen to it as often as you wish. For the next year or so. So thank you so much, Dr. Diefenbeck, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, but just a superb presentation. And our next speaker is Ms. Belita Cowan, and Ms. Cowan is President, Lymphoma Foundation of America. And Ms. Cowan will be addressing with you the Lymphoma Foundation of America's free programs and services, and she'll also go over their patient helpline and website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Ms. Cowan.
Hi, I'm Belita Cowan, President of the Lymphoma Foundation of America. And thank you, Dr. Messner, for inviting us to partner with Cancer Care for this education workshop. Lymphoma Foundation of America is a national cancer charity that provides free services and programs for lymphoma patients. If you are a lymphoma patient or know someone who is, we are here to help you. For example, Lymphoma Foundation of America gives travel aid to lymphoma patients to help them with your transportation costs to and from your doctor appointments. We can also send you a list of nonprofit organizations that provide financial help. These organizations offer help with out-of-town housing, health insurance premiums, prescription medicines, medical equipment and supplies, child care costs, your home or apartment utilities, disability rights advice, caregiver advice, doctor referrals, and mental health counseling. There are 50 organizations on our financial resource list, and they are all there to help you. Please contact us for a copy of the list. Lymphoma Foundation of America also has counselors you can speak with to answer your questions. Our goal is to help you better understand your situation so you can make informed decisions about your health care. And we welcome family members to contact us as well to learn how to help as a caregiver and as a patient advocate. Lymphoma Foundation of America gives grants and awards to cancer researchers who are dedicated to finding a cure for lymphoma and who are developing new treatments and studying the environmental causes of lymphoma. And I want to thank Dr. Dieffenbach for mentioning CAR T-cell therapy. Our foundation gave a grant and award to the lead investigator and her team at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and they were working with other cancer centers in the United States to develop and test CAR T-cell therapy, and our foundation was so gratified with the results and when FDA approved CAR T-cell therapy for lymphoma patients. Please visit our secure website, www.lymphomahelp.org, for information on second opinions, clinical trials, lymphoma diagnosis and staging, and of course, there are inspirational stories from people who are sharing their journey to recovery. It has been my pleasure to participate on the panel today. And thank you, Dr. Messner and Cancer Care, for the excellent information we have heard from Dr. Catherine Dieffenbach. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Cowan. Just a wonderful resource for our participants to be able to contact the Lymphoma Foundation of America. Also, I should let you all know that in about a week after today's program, you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation. So it is an evaluation of the program, but you'll also be getting all the resources that we mentioned during the program as resources that you can access. So although you've written some of them down, perhaps, if you didn't get all that information, you'll be getting it in the SurveyMonkey evaluation. So please stay tuned. And I'm just going to say a few words about CancerCare's free programs and services. So CancerCare is a national nonprofit organization, and we provide help to all cancers, including diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, all lymphomas, and other all cancers. And so many people call our Hope Line in the United States at 800-813-4673, and actually that number is always answered by one of our 40 oncology social workers. They take turns, they queue up and answer the questions. So you don't have to wait to be on queue for someone to talk to you. And usually people call with a specific question, like they need help with transportation for treatment, or they would like to get some support services, or they need some help in talking to their child about having lymphoma. And so the social workers usually address that concern and then go over with them all the different services we offer. So what do we offer? So we do offer practical, financial, and co-payment assistance, which makes a big difference, and also help with food insecurity. We also offer online support groups, and those are on almost every type of cancer, and also for all people, so for caregivers, partners, spouses, young adults. So we do offer these online support groups on many different topics and on many different types of cancer. And you can access all the different online groups we have, because we have so many of them, at www.cancercare.org. Also, we do offer resource navigation. So if we don't have the resource that you need, our resource navigation team will work with you to get you the resource that you need, so that either it be in your city, in your county, in your state, or national programs, or all of the above, to help you. And they will stay with you until they get the resource that you need. We also have coping circles, which are support programs that are offered on specific topics. And we, of course, offer many of these Cancer Connect education workshops, usually about 60 or 70 per year. And of course, we have many publications that you can access from our website and fact sheets. So with that being said, you have a thumbnail sketch of all the services that we offer. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Krista to explain to you how to queue up and ask questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So I'm going to ask, the first question goes to Dr. Diefenbach. If your cancer transforms to DCBL, I'm not sure, they wrote DCBL, how does one's current lymphoma treatment and cancer care get integrated?
So thank you for that question. That's an important question. It really depends on what you're getting treated with when your cancer transforms. Often if your cancer transforms, it means what you're currently getting is not working. So they either want to change it or they want to augment it. If you were, for example, on watch and wait and then you progress, then you're going to definitely need to get treatment. If you were getting a treatment like Rituxan and now you've transformed, you're going to need to get Rituxan plus something else. And the discussion of what that thing is really, you know, will depend on your age, your fitness, whether you've had it, what treatments you've had before, whether you are, you know, how aggressive your transformation is, and a bunch of other factors. But hopefully that starts to answer your question. And if you need more details, I'm happy to answer it further.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And this is a question for Dr. Diefenbach. Is it common for DLBCL survivors to develop secondary primary malignancies?
That's actually quite rare. Particularly for patients who only got frontline chemotherapy. So the highest risk of secondary malignancies are either due to radiation or to chemotherapies that are sort of alkylator-based that cause, you know, strand breaks in DNA. So etoposide, if you get R-EPOC or cyclophosphamide in the CHOP regimen. But you don't get a huge amount of alkylator therapy in 6 cycles of CHOP, or even 6 cycles of dose-adjusted R-EPOC, which is given to primary mediastinal lymphoma or some very aggressive forms of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So the incidence of, if you have an otherwise normal healthy bone marrow and you don't get any other treatment, the incidence of secondary malignancies is quite low. For patients who go ahead and get an auto transplant or CAR-T, that risk is a little bit higher because the treatment for auto transplant is very toxic to stem cells. And because similarly for CAR-T, both the conditioning regimen itself has some leukemia risk, and then the CAR itself has some intrinsic risk for T-cell lymphoma or leukemia.
Thank you so much. And a question from one of our participants, could bispecifics be moved to a second line in lieu of CAR-T?
That's a really important question. So I think that's a research question right now. That just underscores how we have to really look at you know, how these trials are so important, and you know that it's really important that we do trials. So, I mean, I think that's probably like one of the most important questions now to try to figure out is which one should go first, and that's not something we know the answer to at all right now. I mean, in follicular lymphoma, it's interesting. That's a lazy lymphoma, and one of the bispecifics, mosunetuzumab, has tremendous efficacy, and patients are in remission for a long amount of time. So CAR-T being fairly toxic and bispecific mosunetuzumab being quite untoxic, many follicular lymphoma patients will prefer a bispecific to CAR and only go to CAR after the bispecific stops working, whereas in large cell, because it's approved in the second line and patients are worried that their lymphoma is going to, you know, potentially get very aggressive and not be treatable, there hasn't really been a trial yet directly comparing CAR-T to bispecific, and because the data with CAR-T is longer, most patients go to bispecific after CAR or in a clinical trial before CAR.
Thank you so much. What is the difference between primary and secondary lymphoma?
So primary lymphoma is regular lymphoma. Secondary, I'm not sure what's meant by secondary lymphoma. I guess it could be lymphoma that arises from treatment. So a T-cell lymphoma arising from a CAR T therapy or chemotherapy related lymphoma, but I don't really know what secondary lymphoma is.
Okay. Another question for you, Dr. Diefenbach. Are there any ways to predict or suggest a patient is more likely to relapse or fail to respond to treatment?
Yes. So these are the prognostic scores that we have, the International Prognostic Index, that I sort of mentioned, that stage is one. We look at the biology of the tumor, like is it a double hit or a double expressor, cell classification, is this a germinal center or non-germinal center? We can look at other things like CD5 positive.
Excellent. Thank you.
And basically the other thing that's really important is how people do in their interim PET scan. So we do a PET scan. In the middle of treatment, and if that PET scan is negative, then that PET scan basically tells you that you're responding to treatment, and then you do a PET scan at the end of treatment. If both of those are negative, you have a good chance of being cured, although it's not definitive. But if you still have disease on either of those scans, that is highly suggestive that you're not going to be cured with frontline chemotherapy. So that is sort of that's added to the mix after the baseline prognostic score that you get when you first start treatment.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And this is a question from a participant of Dr. Diefenbach. What age is considered too frail to receive CAR-T?
Too frail to receive CAR-T. It's not an age so much as it's your fitness. So I've given CAR-T, the oldest I've given CAR-T has been early 80s. So that encompasses most ages, but I have 75-year-olds that I wouldn't give CAR-T to. So, and I've given chemotherapy to a 97-year-old, but she was a very good 97-year-old. So age is just a number, and it really depends on how fit you are. I could imagine giving a CAR-T to a fit 85-year-old, but it's not going to be every 85-year-old.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks so much. I hope that helps our participant understand. For Dr. Diefenbach, are there targeted therapy options specifically for DLBCL instead of using targeted therapies approved for other blood cancers?
Well, the thing is that lymphomas have very similar targets. So tafa-len is approved for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. That's tafasitamab and lenalidomide. Loncituximab, teracine is approved for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Those are targeted therapies. The bispecifics, which are more immunotherapies, are approved for relapse lymphoma. There are BTK inhibitors that are approved for other lymphomas, but can be used in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. There are targeted therapies that have a label for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, but they don't have diffuse large B-cell lymphoma exclusively in their label.
Thank you. This is a question for Dr. Diefenbach. What does it mean when a patient's DLBCL belongs to the molecular high-grade subset?
So all diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is by definition high-grade, so that's just another way of saying diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. It's not, unless it's, considered high-grade B-cell, which is its own subtype, but if it's just considered diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and the grade is high, then that's nothing. High-grade B-cell lymphoma is sort of a subclassification of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that's thought to be a little bit more aggressive. So it'll depend on really how it's described. If it's just described as diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and the grade is high, then that's just no different from diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. If it's high-grade B-cell lymphoma, that is a little bit more aggressive. It's somewhat of a new classification. There's probably not that much difference between the two.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks. This is really amazing questions, and Dr. Diefenbach, you're doing a great job addressing these questions, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
So this is a question about peripheral neuropathy. Is peripheral, for Dr. Diefenbeck, is peripheral neuropathy a permanent side effect after chemotherapy? Are there any supplements or treatments I can take to try to regain feeling?
That's a really important question. So peripheral neuropathy is something you have to watch for during chemo really carefully. So both vincristine and polatuzumab can cause peripheral neuropathy. It's something you need to ask for on every visit. And then if a patient is developing grade 2 peripheral neuropathy, which means the peripheral neuropathy is not intermittent anymore, but it's constant, you need to reduce the chemotherapy or hold the chemotherapy component that's causing the neuropathy. And this is because mild neuropathy generally resolves within 6 months of treatment. But if you treat the neuropathy once it's grade 2 and you ignore the neuropathy and continue to treat it, then it might not resolve completely once it's done with chemo. So without knowing how long ago your chemo was or how bad your neuropathy is, I would say if you're within 6 months of chemotherapy, most of your neuropathy should resolve. That's generally what it does. The drug gabapentin or Neurontin can be helpful if neuropathy is painful. And the further you are out on chemotherapy without resolution, the more frustrating it obviously is. And if you're, you know, more than 6 months out of chemotherapy and have had no resolution of your neuropathy, you should go see a neurologist. But, you know, then you might wonder, like, how much neuropathy you had during treatment.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's a frequent question that people seem to ask a lot about neuropathy. This is a question again for Dr. Diefenbeck. What affects the risk of lymphoma spreading to the brain?
So very high-grade lymphomas, can go to the brain. In terms of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, involvement of secondary, what we call sanctuary sites, so testis, bone, sometimes tonsillar involvement is a higher risk for brain. So that can be a problem. So there are certain kinds of aggressive lymphomas, like a Burkitt lymphoma that goes to the brain. That's more risk of going to the brain. Some double hits can go to the brain. So the more aggressive a lymphoma is, or if it's in bone or in testis, that has a higher risk of going to the brain.
And a question about... for Dr. Diefenbeck about bispecifics. How are bispecifics administered? IV, oral?
IV.
IV. And so if I get this is another question from Dr. Diefenbeck about infection. If I get an infection during treatment for DLBCL, what are the first steps I should take?
Call your doctor. You know, it depends on the kind of infection. If it's just like a cold or something, then you might just be okay with just, you know, over-the-counter medicine. If it's, you know, if you have a fever, then if your blood counts are low, you may need IV antibiotics. So for that reason, it's really important that you are in communication with your doctor if you're not feeling well.
And then another question is, we have no end of questions here. We won't be able to take all of them. But why isn't treatment started immediately when diagnosed with DLBCL?
Well, it usually is started as quickly as we can. But, you know, you have to get an echocardiogram before chemo to make sure your heart is good. You have to make sure there's IV access. You have to confirm that the pathology is correct. You have to get a scan. So for all of those things, you usually need a little bit of time and coordination. But generally, I can get someone for treatment within a week.
Excellent. And this question about medication for side effects: what over-the-counter medication can I take to try to minimize side effects? I currently am experiencing night sweats, nausea, and loss of appetite.
So the nausea, they should be giving you ondansetron or Zofran and Compazine. Loss of appetite, there are not really over-the-counter things, but, you know, you can work with nutrition. There are some, you know, medical marijuana helps a lot with appetite. and that's legal now. So that's a good thing for appetite if you're willing to go that route. There are some drugs that also can help with appetite, or just picking foods that are tastier to you. A night sweats may be from your lymphoma. It's hard to know. It could be from the steroids you're getting for your lymphoma treatment, in which case they should be generally pretty self-limited and stop when your steroids are done. So without understanding a little bit more about the night sweats, it's hard to be able to make a recommendation, but mostly these are disease or therapy related.
So they should really discuss this with their physician.
That should be discussed with the physician, yes.
Well, I actually want to thank all of our participants for asking such great questions. And I also want to thank Dr. Diefenbach for addressing these questions so thoroughly. I have to say we've done this program before, but this, I have to say, between all the questions that we're able to take and the way Dr. Diefenbach addressed all your questions, this is really an amazing program. In concluding today's program, I'd like to ask our speakers to just provide some takeaways from today's program. I'm going to start with Dr. Diefenbach, what you would like people to take away from today's program.
Would like people to take away that diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is treatable and often curable when it occurs, that there are at least two very excellent and active frontline regimens approved for the treatment of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which cure many patients. For patients who aren't cured, both bispecifics and CAR-T represent options. CAR-Ts have cured patients even with active disease. Bispecifics have had patients with very long remissions, and then there are other agents, chemotherapy regimens beside these. So there are many options for patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Given all this nuance and complexity, you should really be under the care of someone who is specializing in lymphoma, who can really discuss all of these different issues with you in detail and make sure you're well informed about all of them. And your care team should be very up on all of your symptoms, like neuropathy, nausea, and if for some reason you don't feel like they are, please bring these issues to their attention so they can treat you in the best way possible. I'm happy to have spoken to you all today, and I wish you all the best of luck with your health.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Diefenbach. And Ms. Cowan, do you want to give some takeaways from today's program?
Yes, I'd like to say that in addition to what Dr. Diefenbach mentioned, while you're going through treatment, there are so many organizations out here to help you with patient support, emotional support, health counseling, referrals, caregiver advice. There are many organizations that provide financial assistance for so many things like health insurance premiums, out-of-town housing, prescription medicines, travel to and from the doctor. Please take advantage of all these support services while you're going through treatment and for post-treatment follow-up. And again, it's been a pleasure to be with you, and good luck to everyone.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'd like to say a few words to everyone because I realize that we were not able to take everyone's question. I'm just going to say a few words about the fact, for those of you who asked a question or for those of you who have a question yet in queue, I want you all to go back to treating healthcare team with what you've learned today. You've obviously learned a great deal. I'd like you to actually be sure that you're sure to get the answers that you need from the healthcare team, who know you the best. Remember, they have all your records and information, so they can contact you. They can give you information that's really more tailored to meet your own particular needs. So remember, you've learned a lot today. You can ask probably more informed questions. That's really so important for these programs. I also want to remind all of you to be sure to contact the Lymphoma Foundation of America. We will be sending you also all their contact information, as well as CancerCare's contact information that you can call these organizations. But Lymphoma Foundation of America particularly focuses on lymphoma and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So they're great sources of information for all of you on the call today. So I just want to really thank everyone for your participation today. And I want to remind everyone that to be sure to have the phone numbers for your physician, for your oncologist, for your treating healthcare team, but on particularly evenings, weekends, and holidays. Those seem to be the most difficult times for people. So be sure to call evenings, be sure to call them and find out who you can call evenings, weekends, and holidays. That's really important. Seems like during the day, most of you can contact your doctor's office, but it's those other times that really many of you don't have a way to contact. Again, I don't want anyone to feel alone in being on this call today or when the call ends. I want you to now know that you're part of a community of support and we are here to help you. Again, I want to thank you all and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.